Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. Welcome to The Shift. Dez here, back in New York City, and myself and Katie recorded an episode yesterday in my car outside her apartment. Her flatmate was busy doing the cleaning, so we went in my car, which is a fine place to record. And this episode, it was kind of a little bit inspired by the Esther Perel TED Talk that Joanne McNally had mentioned last week. I told Katie to have a listen, and we were going to sort of chat about some of the themes that came up in that, which we did a bit, but it led us on to perhaps something a bit more personal, particularly for Katie, and so we explored that a bit. So this episode is a quick intro into my Love Island obsession and my sadness for Katie to not have been able to really be a part of the Love Island experience. Then we talk a bit about desire, the things that came up in the TED Talk about trying to maintain desire in a long-term relationship, which actually neither of us are experts on, so it wasn't a surprise that we drifted off the topic. And then we get into some stuff about therapy and well-being and mental health. So really, this is like a mental health episode, I think. Certainly, finding the best ways to love yourself and not being afraid to tackle anything that might be hidden inside you that's holding you back. And that's that. The love for Maura begins it, but the love for ourselves ends it. Chat to you after. I feel like you missed out a little bit. Not by not being in Ireland with me, but just like you missed out on the whole Love Island thing, you know?
I know. And you know what? That girl who's a fan of Remy's, when Remy said that there was a woman, she sent me the Dropbox link too, but I never got a chance to watch it. I kind of was like missing anyway, so I missed
it. Well, me and Remy are best friends now because of Love Island. Yeah. And when I was back in Ireland, I was properly able to engage in it for the final week. And yeah, I feel like it's a pity really that you weren't able to engage in that too. Because Maura Higgins is now like an Irish phenomenon, and you're like kind of oblivious to that.
Yeah, a little. I did go on her Instagram page though.
Yeah.
I think you tagged her in something and I clicked onto it.
And?
She's so pretty.
Very pretty.
Yeah.
But you don't know about her as the individual.
No.
Oh, see, this is a problem, Katie.
I'm sorry. I'll go back in time and
watch
it.
Well, you're doing an Irish sex and dating podcast, and the most important Irish sexual being right now is Maura Higgins, and you're not part of that.
I'm sorry. I'll go home right now and catch up on
your home. We're across the street from your apartment in my car.
Yeah.
We're sitting in my car across the street from your apartment. So this last week and a half, you haven't said, "Oh my God, I need to get to know the phenomenon that is Maura Higgins."
I went on her Instagram.
I know, but like that was like one event. I mean, this is a major.
I've been watching Outlander.
Did you just brush your teeth?
Yeah. No, I didn't. That's my lip balm.
Oh right,
because yeah, it's really minty.
I'm having coffee. I feel like I'm not fresh, and suddenly I'm very aware of your freshness, and it's
that's good to know because that's good to know. Because I like this lip balm because I think, oh, you know, if I were ever to randomly kiss anybody, I'll taste minty.
Well, certainly
maybe
the initial...
Maybe overly minty?
No, the initial feeling will be mint. It was like, oh, she's so fresh. And then you stick the tongue and you're like, wow, this fucking bitch just had some garlic.
Yeah.
Anyway, just quickly on the Love Island thing. I got into it and then... I didn't mean it to happen, but I started doing these, you know, these like videos on my Instagram. And they really took off. And then I put one... I just put like a few of them together. I put it up on Instagram. And then on my Facebook... And weirdly enough, it's really like taken off on my Facebook. I wasn't really paying attention. But this morning I noticed that 3 days ago, Maura Higgins' father had messaged me to say, Des, this is really funny. And that's from the father. And then I made sure that it was genuinely him. And it's Mr. Higgins.
That's so nice.
Mr. Higgins messaged me.
Oh, he's probably delighted.
Yeah. And probably it's a pity that Curtis is my friend. So, you know, she was paired up with Curtis.
Okay. And did she like him?
No, they're together.
Okay,
they're officially a couple.
Are they so in real life too?
Yeah, that's Love Island. Love Island is real. It's reality TV.
You know, you never know, really.
Well, you see, you don't know because you don't watch it, so you're not really. I mean, it's almost like
I love love, so I should watch that.
Yeah,
I would love it.
It's almost like you don't exist.
I know.
You know, it's almost.
I know.
Like,
I feel left out with my Irish girl group WhatsApp
exactly.
because we're talking about stuff, and
exactly.
I'm like, who's this? Even my stepmom, when I called her, she was talking about Maura. She loves Maura. So
yeah, so you've missed out on those. Anyway. Curtis is my buddy from Dancing with the Stars, and that's her boyfriend now, because that's like an official thing that happens on Love Island. So I'm not gonna step on his toes.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've already got the approval of the father.
And you have the approval of me. She's a Longford woman, right?
She's from Longford.
That's where my family all live now.
Well, they all live in Longford.
I'm from Kildare, but they moved to Longford. My sister's grown up with a big Longford accent.
Well, that was the joke that kind of I'm not gonna say it went viral, but it got like 100,000 views on Facebook like quite quickly. And the joke was, I was saying like, oh my God, Maura, like I'd do anything for you. I said, I'd live in Longford for
oh
you.
Oh my God.
That's a huge sacrifice.
That's a huge sacrifice. That's what my stepmom did for my dad. And I was like, wow, she must really love
that's
him.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's going to last forever.
And so that was one of my jokes back in the day. Because I would always just, you just pick a place, right? There's actually nothing wrong with Longford per se.
You but haven't lived there.
I had to pick like a... I had to pick like a Midlands town. So I always picked Longford because probably one of the most annoying nights of my career after I got well known in Ireland was a show at the Longford Arms Hotel. Won't get into the boring details. But I picked Longford. But the joke was that Longford is so backward that they watch Reeling in the Years and they think it's the news.
Oh, that's great. I love
that. Which means nothing to our American listeners. But yeah. To our Irish listeners, that's a good joke. So I always pick Longford. But in actual fact, you could say that about any place. But Longford is not officially on my top 10 list in Ireland. However, I would live in Longford for Maura, but I don't think that Maura is long for Longford. I think she'll be moving on to bigger and better things. I think she's going to be a huge star.
Yeah, she is. That's amazing. I lived in Longford for a little while. Did you know that they tried to do a Facebook group of voting Longford off as a county?
But that's ridiculous.
It's funny,
just
though.
It's a silly thing.
I know, but it's funny. Like, of all the places, they pick Longford.
So, anyway.
She'll be a big star, and I'll re-watch.
It's fine. You missed out.
Okay.
It was fun. You know, it's like, it's a silly thing. You didn't listen to the end of the 2 weeks ago when I did a little extra thing at the end of
your Instagram stories?
No, I did. You don't listen. Well, of course you don't listen back to that because you were on it. But when I put up the...
I didn't know.
Yes. When I put up that episode at the end, I did a little PS about Love Island. So you're really not up to date. You're not even on top of the Love Island stuff that's happening on your own podcast.
No.
On your own podcast, Katie. You are not listening to my Love Island recap.
I feel like I'm out of it with lots of stuff. Like, I just started watching Outlander, and when I said it to people, they were like, oh, that's from ages ago. Everybody was watching
it. I mean, Outlander's not I've never watched Outlander.
Oh, I mean, you should.
Is it good?
Yes. There's a very sexy Scottish man in it.
Euphoria, everybody's telling me to watch.
I know, I need to watch that as well. See, there's just too much. We just don't have the time.
Well, yeah, definitely not the time when you're going back to, like, Outlander.
I know, right? And I still have four more seasons, so.
But it was good, you know, it was good being back in Ireland. It was good to get a gauge on the podcast. I mentioned, we had a big jump in numbers, by the way.
Yes. Well, I mean, I saw on the charts.
Yeah, well, we really had a big jump on the charts in Ireland, that's for sure. But I can see it in the numbers, too. So we had a big jump. Long may it last, you know? I think it was a mixture of... we had some good guests. Our numbers, before I went back to Ireland, we had a little percentage jump of listeners from America. Then when I got to Ireland, our Irish percentage jumped. But either way, we've had a decent sized boost. So we have to keep it up now. Big drive forward now, yeah. Katie. We have to make the most of it now. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. So what happened was last week I chatted to Joanne McNally, which was kind of like we needed an episode and I was away. And Joanne mentioned Esther Perel.
Yeah.
Right? So we both had to listen to the clip that Joanne was talking about. But what was really interesting was this woman that I know, like a friend of mine, who listens to the podcast, but she's not a friend through the podcast. She's just a friend. When Joanne McNally mentioned Esther Perel, and I was like, oh no, I don't know about that. She was like, I fucking told you to listen to that fucking months ago. How can you have a sex and dating podcast and not know who Esther Perel is? So you didn't know who Esther Perel was, right?
I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know. And obviously it's viewed like 3 million times, so we're a bit late to the party. But, I thought she mentioned some interesting points. So let's chat about that. Like, you need to chat about stuff. And I thought this is pretty deep, pretty meaningful. And it had been mentioned the week before, so it's kind of a follow-on.
Yeah. Well, she said, what we expect from our partner now is what a village used to give you. Which is
I like
really
that
good.
When she said that. What we expect to get, what an entire community would provide.
And that is true, where you're like, I want them to be my best friend, but I want them to do this, I want them to do that. And I think, I got accused when I was in my long, and it's not that long, but it was only 3 years, but of emotionally cheating because I had like a male best friend. And now listening to this, I'm
emotionally cheating?
Yeah. Because I would go out for drinks with the male best friend and talk to him about my problems. And he was like, you should talk to me about that. But now listening to this, actually, that probably... It's good to have other people you can go to instead of depending on the one person. But then
well,
other
first
people,
of all, yeah, it's not fucking emotionally cheating.
I know.
Because that's
ridiculous.
Just nonsense.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Like, you're not allowed to have fucking friendships. But, I mean, that's a whole thing about, control and relationships taking over your life. Like, you have to... You have to be able to have your own life.
100%. And she says, she made such a great point because I found this recently enough where, let's say, what we like in the bedroom. So like control and dominance and all these other things that you like in sex, but you don't want that to come out in your relationship. So people need to find a separation. Like just because if you control me in the bedroom doesn't mean like I want to be controlled outside of it.
Yeah. You know? Although I don't know if people are making this conscious.
I know.
I don't think they're making it conscious.
But she said, "Well, it's interesting because that's erotic there, but that's not what you want in real life." So it's like trying to separate the two, that there is difference between.
Yeah, but let's just focus for a second on fucking emotional cheating.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that is fucking nonsense.
I know.
I mean, she actually does another talk about infidelity, and she kind of gets in a little bit about nobody can agree on what infidelity actually is. But like emotional cheating that like you would talk to somebody else.
Yeah.
Like of course I'm going to fucking talk to somebody else about my problems because they're probably going to be more objective than you.
Yeah. And maybe if you stop being shitty.
that too. But
no,
even
but
just,
it was just other problems. It was just a friend, and he actually was engaged. So it was never anything. But we got on well. And his now wife and mother of his child, she's amazing. She like had no worries. She like trusted him. So it wasn't a big deal. She'd be like, yeah, go for a drink with Katie. But it was, but I guess it was more on my partner's side. It was a bit of insecurity,
yeah,
a bit of worry.
A lot of the infidelity stuff has to do with insecurity and how it affects you, how you feel about yourself and all that. But emotional cheating, I mean, how fucking ridiculous is that? Like suddenly you're supposed to be able to control every fucking emotion. Like if you see somebody good looking and you get a little flutter, that somehow that's a fucking, that you're cheating, that's emotional cheating.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I remember when I was a youngster, just stopped drinking, and I was exploring loads of spiritual options. I read the Celestine Prophecy. You ever hear about this book?
No.
It was like the fucking self-help book du jour of, like, I guess the mid-90s. And it had all these insights. I think it was like 10 insights or 8. It was 10 insights. But I always remember that insight number 8 was about people's codependency, like people's looking for too much in a relationship. And it said that people need to be an O. By the way, this is just mumbo jumbo from the Celestine Prophecy, right? People need to be an O, right? But most people, in other words, they need to be complete within themselves. They can't need somebody else to feel complete. You need to be an O. But most people are C's because there's like, everyone's got their issues.
Yeah.
And then they meet somebody, and for the first time in their life, they feel whole because you put two C's together and you have an O.
Yeah.
But then you are always reliant on the sea to feel whole, which of course will never happen. And you'll become codependent, and that you'll need too much from each other. And you know, no human being can provide that. So you need to be an O. And then when you meet somebody, you need to make the number 8.
Aww.
And that is the ideal relationship.
What is a letter that's not, is a bit more than a C, a little less than an O? I think that'd be okay as well.
It's just really a case of drawing the C a little bit differently.
Yeah.
It's just a more...
Who does not have their issues?
Just a longer C. I know, but this is just bullshit from the self-esteem prophecy. However, another great self-help book du jour, probably, I think, from the 30s, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. You ever hear about this book?
No.
Very good, sort of, almost like a long poem.
Okay.
But it's talking about the usual stuff of life and relationships and, you know, feeling complete in yourself and being spiritual and finding meaning in life. But I always remember the line when they talk about relationships, and it's basically saying that two human beings need to stay separate. You know, you shouldn't be completely connected. You need to stay separate, because like the strings of a lute, when played together, they make beautiful music, but they never touch. No, so it's just a kind of a metaphor for, I think, partly some of what she's getting at in this talk, which I like, is that it's very important to maintain your own life. But
yeah, well, that made me think of a saying, and I don't know whoever said it to me, but like about your partner should just add to your happiness. They shouldn't make your happiness. So you should be already happy. And then it's just like, oh, this is great. But it'll be more successful if you can like still walk away. Like you can, it's not like your happiness isn't dependent on them.
Yes.
Like I think that emotionally cheating thing had really messed with me for future relationships, because then I would start to feel guilty about my other friendships, because I'm like, oh, I should really be only sharing this with them. And I think that's, we do. So even though we put pressures on ourselves too as well, like you're right about losing that sense of like, or even just going and doing your own thing. And
yeah, but also on the flip side, it's very easy to project the shit that's going on for you onto your partner, and I find it hard to separate the difference. I mean, I know, like, if I talk about myself in terms of like long-term relationships and like how it affects desire, I know that if I'm in a particular mood, tired or pissed off or whatever, I'll not want to put that onto my partner, but it will happen. It will absolutely happen sometimes. And even though in the back of my mind, I know that this has nothing to do with them, sometimes I'm not exactly persist, but I will not have, my pride will get in the way and I will just be like, fuck it. You know, like I won't back down, or I won't say like, oh, you know what? I'm just a fucking tired and I'm being a fucking asshole. And let me go for a walk for 10 minutes and I'll stop being an asshole. I won't do that. You know, I'll just leave it.
Well, it's like, you know, when you're by yourself and you're angry about something like happened at work and you're really, really mad, and then you just have to deal with it yourself, and then you're like, oh, it's fine. But when you have someone there, all of a sudden you have someone you can kind of fight with, or you have someone you can take your anger out on. And you just wouldn't do that if you were alone. If you were alone, you would just deal with it and you'd move on. So that's kind of a lot. I think that happens a lot as well. Well, all of a sudden you have a bit of a punching bag, like not physically, but like you're able to be like, I'm mad and fuck you. You didn't fill up the kettle with the hot. Well, you left it empty with the water again. And that's not what it's about. But you have the chance to get mad at someone.
And I mean, everybody does it. It's totally normal, but it is hard. I don't know the exact, I don't know the ideal way to maintain. I often think that couples, they'll never do it, but they should always have like one day a week where you both sit down in like a neutral space, no matter how you're feeling, no matter how fucking annoyed you are, sit down and you say, here's the stuff that's bugging me and here's the stuff I think is going well. And you try to do it in a way where you can say, yes, I can see that I was being negative on these things. No, I don't 100% accept that. And then, you know, you try to sort of work it out and then leave it all there and just like hug and shake hands and be like, okay, well, let's just let all that go. Because in actual fact, there's so much stuff that you can just let go.
Yeah.
But you choose not to.
No, I think that's great.
You choose not to.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, I remember this one comedian said to me that he thought about all the arguments he has with his wife, And he said at least 30% of them happen 2 hours after coffee.
Okay. 2 hours after coffee?
Because you crash and you're in a fucking mood.
See, I don't drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah, so. But you crash and you're in a mood.
Oh, right. You know? No, and I find anyone I've dated over here, when I've been like at my most, like, yeah, I talk about like not having the best relationships, but I wasn't fucking rock star in them either. Like, I know that when I work a lot and I do a lot of shows, I don't sleep a lot and I'm harder to deal with then. So it's not really them, they've just come into my space and I've felt like I have to see them because I'm dating them, when really I should have just went, I need to be by myself tonight, because then I'm like quite argumentative and tired and mad, and I'm mad that I'm visiting them, but I feel I have to because I feel like I have to put effort into the relationship. But I'm sure if I were just like, oh, I've been doing this all week, I'm tired, I can't see you this week, they'd probably be like, oh yeah, that's grand. They'd probably be, that'd be better than having me over there being like, what do you mean you don't have soy milk?
So how do you feel about this whole thing of like, I need him to make me feel like I'm a princess, or I need him to make me feel like I'm the most important person? How do you feel about like when you hear, or I need her to make me feel like, you know, I'm the king? You know, how do you feel about this sense of like putting this thing on a relationship where like the love has to be that you are the most important person all the time?
I actually don't personally like that, because a lot of the guys I've dated have been quite, not all of them, but have been quite intense and have made me feel like that. Now, I'm thinking of two partners that were very much like, you're my world. And it scared me because I was like, God, I don't think I can provide that. I can't be your world. So I don't like that. But I do want to be treated and I want to be respected. But I don't think that's good. I don't think that's healthy.
Do you think we put... I guess what I'm bringing up is, do you think that in modern society we put too much pressure on relationships to provide things for ourselves?
Yeah. No, I do. And I think as well, did we mention it, or did Joanne mention it? That idea, again, about the person being your best friend. I feel like when we get into a relationship very quickly, we have high expectations, we're trying to rush it, we're trying to get to 11, where actually your best friend you've known for 10 years or, you know,
more.
Yeah. And so like, I remember when my ex, he was very upset with the relationship I had. So both exes, two exes had, were upset with two male friendships, but I was like, I've known them for years. Like, of course we're not going to be on that level yet, and you shouldn't expect that. But it's really hard when sex is involved and it's intimate and it's quick. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we put too much pressure quickly, and I think that's why people are not ending up in long-term relationships, because it's kind of all of this stuff happens so fast, instead of being like, just go slow and kind of see where it goes, which I struggle with. I can be quite intense, and I'm trying to work on that and just letting myself take a bit of time, because I get into it quick and then I'm like, I need to get out.
Oh yeah, well, that's very easy to do.
Yeah, so I think way too much pressure quickly. Like, yeah, if you're together 10 years and you're like, okay, actually, I need this, and you're not providing that, that's fine. But
now I have to get in a long-term relationship to practice all
me
these.
Me too. Who wants to be with me? I love love.
No, you keep saying that, I love love. But even that concept of this whole thing of like love, even like love, it's like a thing of like, are you in love? Love, love, love. Like,
oh my God. But no, so I'll talk about this a little bit now, because I'm out of it long enough that I don't think he'll be listening to it. But so I guess, when I broke up with my ex-boyfriend, we had a very intense relationship, and it was very I love you very quickly, and it was, the sex was amazing, everything happened so fast. But so when I broke up with him, he started sending me messages saying that I was a liar and I was a fake, and he sent me a picture of a love you message I'd wrote him, like a letter, I guess. It was like we had gone away, and I went, oh, I love you so much, thanks. And he was like, you're a liar and a fake. And to be honest with you, maybe, like, I don't mean to be, like, in one way he might be right, like, as in, I don't think I'm a liar or fake, but I was just kind of going with it, and it was fun at the time. I don't really know if I actually know what love is. And
but does it matter? I mean, I think we exaggerate the shit out of the word love. I think like there was just so many fucking emotions involved in what we call love,
and so much expectations. Like, if you love me, don't expect me. It was just so the whole thing. Yeah, like, I think you can say something and you can change your mind, and yeah, we just don't really know.
Yeah, but you shouldn't. Why are you even allowing yourself to? Well, you're doubting yourself based on this fucking angry responses from this fucking control freak.
Yeah, but I mean, my point is, it's okay if you feel it for a second and then you don't, or like, nobody really, we don't really understand our own feelings. Like, if you're in the moment, that's fine. Like, I mean, the expectation that love had to be that if I loved him, I would put up with all that shit. I guess that was his point. And I think people do have that, like, but I love them so they can do this. And it's like, no, love is the last thing. Like, the respect.
But trust me, like, control, somebody said this to me once, control is the absence of love.
Yeah.
Now, whether you can break that down and that sentence holds up, I don't know. But a control freak talking to you about how you were a liar about love is really comical.
Yeah, true. Well, like, and I guess the point that I, like, I am aware of all of that, but the point I'm trying to make is that I think I love everybody. I'm a very lovable person. I have a lot of love to give. I tell everybody I love them. Love is easy for me. And if I break up with someone, it's never really to do with love. It's like, I mean, there's so much more we need to build, like trust. And we go, you hear my friends being like, but I love him. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't matter. You'll love the next person in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
like love can happen. I do believe love can happen quite instantly, where you like meet them and you're like, or what? I don't know if that's that feeling, that infatuation, but I think it's the other stuff. It's the stuff like trust that builds up over years and respect, and like, and then we let people disrespect us because we're like, oh, but I love him and he loves me and I want to be loved. And it's like, well, I think that comes back down to just fucking love yourself. Go masturbate in the shower.
Yeah, love yourself. I mean, not necessarily about masturbation.
I know.
I mean, loving yourself is a
treat yourself. Be nice to yourself. You know, the best thing that ever happened to me was like starting to be like suiting myself. I used to try to please everybody so much, and I would piss so many people off because I'd try to meet up with everybody or I couldn't do that. And then when I just started suiting myself, everything fell into place. And it's you have to really like, oh, I feel shitty, go get your nails done. Yeah, it's $30, but or $20 or €20. I don't know how much it costs at home. Just fucking,
I mean,
do
basically
it.
Katie, what you're saying is that you need to be an O.
I'm never going to be an O, though.
You need to be an O.
What's a letter?
What do you mean you're never going to be an O?
I'm a U.
What are you talking about? I'm never going to be an O. If you're basically saying you're never going to be an O, you're saying that your life is going to be unfulfilled.
No, I think...
Are you saying right now that you're not going to be fulfilled?
I think my life is very fulfilling, but I think it's a hard expectation to put on yourself that you're always going to be happy. And you know what? Actually,
no, whoa. This is not about always being happy.
Okay.
This is not about always being happy.
Well,
you know, being comfortable with yourself and not needing another human being to be comfortable, but needing another human being to add to your life.
Yeah.
It's about, I guess, wanting and not needing, which she says in the thing.
I think I am an O then. I don't know what I am. I'm a U. Well, what are you?
It doesn't I'm definitely not an O, but I'm very happy with my. I don't need a fucking. Yeah. I never need to somebody else to feel like an O.
Yeah, true.
I'm happy to just be incomplete. I'm content with my incompleteness.
Which is great. Well, that. Oh yeah, that's okay. So fulfillment is fine. That's good. You're right. But there is a lot of pressure nowadays to always be happy. And if you're sad for a second, it's like I just think. I guess that's different with the O, but I mean...
But that's a different... That's a deeper thing about people, not being comfortable with emotion.
Yeah, just be sad for a second. I just wanted to say that because I was just thinking about how, like, that, again, I guess to me that comes with fulfillment as well, is, like, being okay when you're sad. Like, oh, jeez, I'll just have to sit in this now for a little while. But because it's, like, a balance.
Well, yeah, emotional balance is difficult to achieve.
But yeah, so then if you're in a relationship as well, you have to know that, oh, she said that there's phases. She said erotic long-term couples who are like good with it know that passion comes in phases, and that, you know, but that, you, like she said, it's not going to fall out of the sky. You got to work on it. But they also know that, okay, it'll come and go, and yeah.
Well, what were you saying there? You faded out of that point. You were about, like, to make a point. You got distracted.
I guess that was a separate point. It's probably not about relationships. It's just about people in general just being okay with being sad for a second. I've been thinking about that lately. Like, people are like, oh, I'm. People are depressed, of course. But then some people are like, don't realize that, okay, there is a balance. That was it, pretty much. Just, and I think that works in relationships too as well.
Well, yeah, and that's a very difficult thing of noticing. When somebody says, I'm depressed, it's just like you're sad versus you have an actual problem with depression.
And I just think, especially...
Well, that can be difficult.
I don't know what it's like in Ireland back now, but I noticed it in America that I had a friend and she was struggling with anxiety. She goes to the anxiety therapist or whatever they're fucking called, and she gives her medication straight away, and then she ended up having like spasm attacks from the medication. Now, when I spoke to that friend, I was like, what is going on in your life? And she was like, I can't afford the rent because the roommate moved out. I don't have the money for it. And it's all money issues. And really what should have happened was, before they ever went to the medication, before they ever diagnosed her with anxiety disorder, it's actually just she needed to learn how to fix this problem, like get a roommate in or fix her money issues. And there should have been physical steps before it went to that. And I think that's a very much thing here where people are like, you can't be sad, or you have to be happy, you can't be anxious, or it's a disorder. And it's like, no, you're anxious because you just started a new job. Okay, give yourself a few weeks, it'll be grand.
I think you are correct on one level, but I also think on another level it's dangerous.
Yeah, I'm also not a therapist, so don't quote me.
I'm just saying it's dangerous to dismiss it outright.
Yeah, I'm not doing that either.
Because for every scenario where you are 100% correct that perhaps they're too quick to prescribe medication, and that some people that basically it's very easy to get prescribed, so you really can go to a therapist, or you can go, by the way, you have to go to a psychiatrist, I believe, to get actual medication, but that it's quite easy to just present with certain, you know, certain things and get medicated for it, and that could be a problem. On the flip side, it's important to not dismiss the medication,
because
for some people it can be life-changing.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Like, but over-prescription,
I think you should go to the psychiatrist or the therapist, but I think as well there can be like a... try other methods as well, because obviously if someone has like a mental disorder, you need the tablets and you need to fucking take them, and that's going to make your life much better. Like, I have a friend with bipolar and her life changed.
Yes.
Like, I mean, she says now sometimes she'll stop taking them because she'll forget, and it could be within a couple of days her relationship will start to fall apart or something, and she'll go, fuck, I gotta get back on my meds.
And listen, you're getting into like some
you're
getting into some serious mental health stuff. But I also do get what you're saying about people's discomfort with their emotions, not being able to handle their emotions, not being comfortable feeling certain ways, and that is a journey for everybody. A sense of emotional balance, well-being, understanding, you know, how you're feeling, not letting your emotions completely drive your behavior. But that's kind of like, I think that's like a lifelong task.
And I'm only saying all of this because this is very personal to me. So what I'm saying might be very different, and don't take it for gold or come at me with a DM. But the point I'm saying is, because I realized I was dating all these men because I was looking for happiness from them. I was looking for love from them because I didn't feel love from parents. This is my own psychoanalyst. But once I started to be like, oh, I just have to like be nice to myself, and oh, okay, I'm sad today, but I'll be fine tomorrow, or I'll get over it, or I'll go treat yourself. And when I started doing that self-care, it really helped me. And that might not help.
What are your self-care tricks?
Okay, so what I started doing recently, I started getting my nails done. That's so silly, but I never done that before because I thought it was a waste of money. And why would I ever waste my money? And then I realized I have all these savings. I'm not fucking spending them. That's a very Irish thing to be like, oh, I got to save, and oh, that's I know I should use it. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, just treat yourself a little. And things like,
so getting your nails done was one of your spiritual moves.
It was lovely. It's so relaxed. I love being touched, and that's another reason why I love having a boyfriend. I realized I like having a boyfriend because I like when they touch me and give me massages. And then I went, fuck, I could just go buy a massage. And so I've been buying massages. And I love,
but you can't get a happy ending, which is,
I know, right? Well, yeah, and no, so obviously there's things that you're not gonna get that I will get from a boyfriend that will make me, you know, like sex and stuff. But and what else? I put a lot of pressure on myself when it comes to, so when I wasn't doing comedy, I was an artist, and I would have to work at it all the time and work at my job because I would always feel like I was trying to prove something. So I'd work extra hours because I'm a hard worker. But then I was like, you know what? Nobody gives a fuck, Katie. If you want to just work a day less and take a day off and like read or go to the beach, that's fine. So I was trying to prove something to nobody. Like, it's, and I think a lot of people do that. Like, look, I'm grinding and I never sleep. And it's like, oh, you can just sleep. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't make it make you successful.
Oh yeah, sleep is key.
Yeah. So all these little things, like, or eat bread. I'm sorry, I went off bread for so long, and then I'm a much happier person since I went back to it. And I don't care.
Oh, bread. So really, you think the absence of bread was causing a spiritual hollowness in your life?
I think it was my issue with my body, because when I
your soul needs gluten.
When I'm telling you, when I went up, came over to America, I put on a lot of weight. Not even a lot, like a little bit of weight, because I was eating. I was in working in a fast food restaurant, and I was stuffing my face with people's leftover food. I'm disgusting. But anyway, it was lovely. Lots of fries and milkshakes. I put on weight, and then when I stopped working there, I lost it. And a lot of people commented on it, and it gave me like a body image issue. And all of a sudden I was like, I can't eat bread ever again. I need to stay like this. People are complimenting me. And then recently I went, fuck it, who cares if I put on a little bit of weight? I like bread.
Yeah.
I'm going back to it, and it's been so good. I've been a happy person for it.
Well, also it's very practical.
Yeah, I feel
it's so much easier to get a snack when you're not eating bread.
Oh my God, I have so much more energy as well. I didn't realize that was the only carbohydrates in my diet, because I just generally, I've always enjoyed salads, or, you know, so once I cut out bread, I was tired all the time. And now in the morning, I feel like more energy, where I feel like a happier person. But I mean, it's just like those things of not being so strict on yourself. And that will then hopefully I'll end up in a great relationship, and they'll be like, oh, she's not putting the pressure on me to make her happy.
That's great, because most people say stuff like meditation, going to therapy.
I don't go to therapy. I'm keeping yoga, whatever's locked up in there locked up.
Get your nails done. Get your nails done. Eat fucking basic bread.
Yeah.
Get Kerrygold butter.
Yeah.
Lather it on.
But I just think if you start with the little things first, right?
Well, yeah.
Eat chocolate.
I mean, on a more in-depth level. I do think a lot of people tie their well-being into certain behaviors, which on one level they are healthy behaviors, like exercise, like diet. You know, they do these things to better themselves, but I do find that it can trigger like an OCD reaction. You know, you can get people that are inclined to obsessive compulsive behavior, which I include myself in that, by the way. And suddenly this healthy thing can become a problem, because your well-being is tied to behaving a certain way. And when you have any slight variation from that behavior, you actually use that to give yourself a hard time. And it's actually bad for your well-being.
Yeah, and that's a great sentence you just said about give yourself a hard time, because we do. We're the hardest. When I think about the things I say to myself, or the hard things I am, if anyone else said that to my friend, I'd be like, you're hard. I wouldn't allow for it. So I think that's what you're saying. Like, it is an excuse to be hard on yourself.
Yeah, and it's almost, now this is a deeper, this is a thing that I think, but in the absence of religion, particularly like in big cities in the Western world, where religion is not as important to some people, and I appreciate some people might be listening and religion is still important, which is absolutely fine, but in the absence of religion, or certainly in the absence of the rigidity of sinning or not sinning, we have actually just found a way to create the same scenario, which is, these are the things that mean I am being good, and if I don't do these things, I'm not being good.
Yeah.
And you get this feeling of, oh, this will be exciting if I do this thing that's not good. The excitement builds up, you do it, and then you crash because you have given in to the, you know, the thing that you weren't supposed to do.
Yeah.
Which in a way is just a continuation of the shame spiral that we all claim to have exited from, because we stopped believing in religion, or, you know, like all the things we did. I'm liberated from that. I'm out of that shame spot. But we just create new shame spot.
No, you're so right. And I can only relate it to comedy, but I think anyone who's listening will be able to relate it to their work world, or like you said, especially with exercise, is a very similar.
Well, exercise and diet, I think, are two big ones in a modern world. Two big things that people begin to associate good feelings versus bad feelings.
And like, so I've most of my comedy experiences in New York City, a lot of the comedians are atheists. They were very vocal about that, but they treat comedy like religion. Like, oh, you didn't get up three times tonight? Oh no, I can't go out tonight. I didn't get up three times tonight. Or there's a very like, they put that a lot of exactly what you're saying, kind of like, and then if they take a night off, like I get text messages from friends going, oh, I took tonight off, I feel so guilty, oh, I don't deserve this now. And it's like, you're right, it is like a religion. And I think a lot of other work is a similar.
Yeah, work is another thing that people use. And then it's that sense of, am I being good or am I being bad? But, you know, all these cycles are very hard to break out of.
I'm going to say something now and I feel like I'm going to get in trouble for it, but I'm going to go for it. You know, when you were saying that I didn't say like meditation or go to therapy. So I obviously haven't gone to therapy yet, and I will one day. And I think it's very healthy to go get a massage for your brain. The only thing I've been thinking a lot about is the amount of my friends who use therapy here every week, and they go and they talk about like their boyfriend, or they go and talk about their friend. But I just feel like it's good to do that, but I feel like you've put in a middleman. Like, I just wonder if they were okay to go. Like, I wonder if you just talked to, if communication was better, like you just talk to the person you have the issue with. Like, if my friend has an issue with me, why didn't she come to me first? I'm just wondering, is there now like an extra person? And I guess maybe it's better to go when you're able to get it more to a certain.
Well, you haven't gone to therapy.
Yeah, I should just go. So you don't actually know
what the fuck you're talking
I
about,
know,
Katie.
I'm scared.
No, let me just I'll just counteract that just a touch. What's wrong with having an objective observer?
Yeah, so as I was saying, that I was thinking actually you might get your thoughts a bit straight
and
take
out
the emotion.
You're also giving a very narrow view of what may be going on at
that
therapy session.
No, true. You're right. And that's just shows an insight of my kind of lack of knowledge about the whole thing. But as I was saying it, I was like, actually, that might be quite good. Then maybe I wouldn't have thrown the plate at him. Because I've never done that.
Yeah, and you know, and possibly you can, you know, possibly say if you went, you might be able to get down to the deeper emotional things that may be driving what you consider to be a cycle that you can't break in terms of the guys that you meet. You may actually be able to get... You may or may not be able to get a deeper understanding of what's driving you, perhaps the actual feelings that you may not even realize are sort of trapped in there, that if you actually released some of that feeling, or you really sort of, like some people think that you can heal them by like replacing the bad sentences that are fucking driving around your brain that you're not aware of, there may be some healing.
Yeah, you know what? I'd love if some people DM'd me and told me what their experience is with therapy, because I'm afraid to go to therapy because I'm afraid that I've done such a great job at locking up those repressed memories.
Well, why do you need somebody to DM? I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, great.
Why are you fucking asking random people?
Well,
that guy fucking sitting next to you.
Okay, true. Well, I was just thinking, I guess I was trying to get more like people. Okay, yeah, no, that's true.
What? People that fucking know what they're talking about?
No, I was going to say just like interaction with us, you know.
Oh, yeah,
inclusion.
No, I get that. But no, that's also a delay tactic of you're sitting here right now, okay. In my car.
Okay, so my fear is that I'll go and all of those repressed memories, or I've spent 10 years building this kind of cage around all of it, and I feel like if they fucking open it up, I'll just be like, I'll fall apart.
Okay,
it's a control thing probably, but...
It's fear.
I'm afraid.
Well, yeah, but it's fear. Control is a fear protector. Mm-hmm. But number one, it's absolutely okay to be afraid. That's the most important thing, that you're how you're feeling is how everybody feels. And it's how in the past how I felt. And so I'll give you number one, because I stopped drinking when I was 19, 1995, went to a lot of AA, NA, and all that stuff is encourages self-discovery. In fact, even in the steps alone, and people can agree or disagree, but the steps say you make a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. You take a look at the behaviors that are driving it, and then you make amends to all the people you harmed based on that behavior. Right now, in your situation, you're not talking about doing an inventory of things that you did wrong, but part of anybody's inventory is they take a look at their past. And almost everybody that gets to that moment in their self-discovery, and I'm not just talking about alcoholics and addicts, I'm talking about everybody who gets to a moment where they want to deal with trauma, which is what you're dealing with, expresses almost word for word what you just expressed. So you are having the feelings that everybody has, including myself, which is, which I had, which was, I've locked this stuff away. If the box opens, I will fall apart.
And it's also as well, it's like you, to step away and to get over it, you have to be strong. But to open it again, you're like being a victim. And that's something I struggle with.
But that's a shame. So that's a shaming sentence.
And I know I don't want to. And I would never, the thing is, I would never feel like that if it were my friend.
But first of all, you're not being a victim. All you're doing is exploring yourself. So
I'm also afraid as well. I feel like I've built this thing and my mental health is good. And I'm afraid if I open it, my mental health will fall apart.
But you forget the alternative to that, which is that it will get better.
Yeah.
Which is more likely what's going to happen.
And
because in actual fact, none of what's going to come up, you don't know. I mean, obviously people repress emotion and then, you know, they remember things that they didn't remember. But... As Alice Walker, the poet, once said, tears left unshed turn to poison in the ducks.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So why allow, let's just say the potential that some of this stuff is driving your life in a negative way. Why would you say, well, fuck it, I'll just accept this level of life because it seems okay now, or as an actual fact I can transcend? Not to mention that many, many people with worse trauma, and this is not shaming your trauma.
No, no.
Many, many people with worse trauma have found a way to heal from it, not let it drive their lives, and then, more importantly, are able to help others in a similar situation.
Yeah. Well, I guess, and when I said victim before, like, I would never feel that towards a friend, but I guess because I know if I go in and talk about it, I'll have to realize that, oh, that was bad. Whereas it's easier just to be like, I'm fine, it's grand.
So in other words, you don't deserve to admit that something bad was done to you.
I think,
which is really shame. That's the heart of shame.
And that comes down to what it actually shows that everything that happened is what I'm believing, because that's what I was told, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So
this is really about the liberation of shame.
Yeah.
Which is really, I think, a key struggle in humanity.
Yeah.
So.
And I found one thing and I wonder if people relate to this. I'm bad in relationships because when they do get to know me and they do start to talk about my childhood, that's where I kind of am like, oh, fuck. And I kind of either I'll open up and then expect them to be able to deal with that. And that's really hard when I haven't dealt with it. Or I don't want to open up and they're like, what? There's something they're not sharing with me. So I think that is probably one of the reasons why I haven't been in a long term good relationship, because, you know, it's easier to date kind of stuff that but I just think when we're talking about relationships, I think that can relate back. So
yeah, but you know what though? It's not even that important to try to intellectualize what it's doing to you, because it actually takes you away from whatever's in you.
Yeah.
So really trying to make sense of, oh, I do this because this happened to me as a child, or all that stuff is actually less important to you getting to a place where you realize that you deserve to be able to, that you're not a victim by saying, oh shit, bad shit was done to me as a kid. It's traumatic. It can be viewed as actually post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, you may have like a version of PTSD. So is it better to just pretend like that didn't happen and get on with your life with the potential that some of that PTSD will drive your life negatively for eternity? Or is it better to say, actually, I value myself, which is all this real American speak, but like, I value myself. You literally just said, don't give myself a hard time, go get my nails done, all these things. I value myself enough to say it's worth me acknowledging what was done to me, find out if I'm hiding from any of it, and free myself from it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really valuing yourself.
Yeah.
That's what comes after you get your nails done.
I know. It's funny because I'm like, my first thought, I'll be honest, which is when I think about therapy, I'm like, oh, somebody wasted my money, which is awful. And I'm, again, that's another thing where I'm like weird with money as well. So, but then I'm like, you know, the nails maybe was a step towards the therapy money, because that's four times the price.
I'm not shaming you on getting your nails done thing at all. But, you know, I really was more inspired by the fact that you expressed what I've expressed in the past, and I've heard so many, because, you know, when you're in the fellowship, you sponsor people. And when you sponsor people, the idea is to guide them through the steps. And by the way, like, I'm not suggesting, the steps are literally just one of many ways to articulate like a journey of self-discovery for humanity, right? So one of the things is you guide these people through the steps. And when they get to the fourth step, which is basically writing down all the shit that you did, nobody wants to open the can of worms, because they are convinced that when that fucking can is opened, that everything's going to fall apart. And it very rarely does. And, you know, like, because I don't want to say it never does, because that's not fair, because people have mental health issues, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there are, you know, I guess there are some scenarios where stuff can be triggered for people that's very difficult. But I definitely don't think that's the case with you. And it's very, 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 very rarely the case, you know? So I don't want to be putting out any information that's like, you know, not 100% true, but in my experience, nobody has ever fallen apart. They've only ever improved their lives, you know? Mm-hmm. They've only ever improved their lives. you know. And I guess maybe with some deep sexual abuse stuff, I think when it comes to sexual abuse, that's where you get into like very difficult stuff about trapped emotion, you know. And most of those people that uncover that also figure out how to deal with that trauma. So I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah. No, actually, no. And when I have a similar friend who went to therapy over sexual abuse, and I'd say her life would be a lot worse if it wasn't for it. So her thing was very positive, and it took her a long time to get through that. But yeah, no.
I don't know anybody who had a negative experience. Yeah. I actually, and I know people who've dealt with some horrible shit. I know guys that were in fucking letter frack. You know?
Yeah.
The darkest of stuff.
Yeah.
And their lives improved when they essentially, I think for most people, their lives improve when they realize that they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I think, especially when something happens as a child, I only realized recently, like even up until I was 18 and all that stuff was going on. Oh, even at 18, I was still young. So at 5, I was young. Of course, I was a child. But even at 18, like, I mean, it's just interesting that if I were to look at someone else and seen what was going on, I'd be like, that's awful. You'd have compassion for them. But for me, I'm like, oh, do you know what? It's fine. I'll just move on. I'll be grand. And then you feel a loyalty to the parent in one way. You're like, well, they gave birth to me, so I better not. I never told anybody what was going on. And, you know, and when I left, I never told anybody either. I just kind of went and did my own thing. And a lot of people had like a bad impression of me because they were like, oh, she just fucking ran off. But I was like, you know, I'll just keep it to myself and that's fine. But in hindsight, I'm like, actually, well, I'm not the one who did anything, you know. And I guess I can still talk about it, and I could like go to a therapist and talk about the things she did, because I'm like, well, she did them, do you know.
Exactly.
And it was just, I just realized this recently where I'm like,
yeah, I mean, the more important thing is if you saw something happen to somebody else, you'd feel bad for them.
I know, if someone
you'd
did that have to my sister, I'd but, murder them.
But you don't have compassion for yourself.
But it's really, and it's really hard to do that. It's really, and then yeah,
it's difficult. It really is difficult. And I mean, I reached that point, but just to keep it more general, just to give you like a moment that might help you to understand how, on an intellectual level, it seems like it's very easy for you to say bad stuff happened to me and I didn't deserve it and it wasn't my fault. But actually, it's very hard for people to get to that point. Now, even though it's a cheesy moment in the movie, did you see Good Will Hunting?
I have seen it. Is that the one with the two guys, their friends, Ben Affleck and...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that movie.
That is Good Will Hunting, right? Yeah. Dead Poets Society is the one previous... Oh, so yeah. You saw Good Will Hunting, yeah. Right? So, obviously...
Years ago.
Yeah. But do you remember the pivotal scene is Robin Williams challenges him to say, it's not your fault.
Was that when they were downstairs? I think I remember.
And he's like, shut the fuck up, man, you know? And then he's like, it's not your fault. Shut the fuck up, man. And he keeps saying it to him. And that's the moment that breaks him. Yeah. And if you don't understand, that seems like a bit cheesy. Like, how the fuck is that the thing that breaks this guy down? It's not your fault. But actually, he couldn't fucking have the compassion for himself to realize that he didn't fucking deserve it as a child. The things that were done to him. You know, yeah. The things that are driving him to be this like compulsive, you know, all this negative stuff, that the anger, you know, all the things that he's expressing in that movie. That's the moment where he was like, it's not my fault. And that's actually a hard place to get to.
Yeah.
And in fairness, like what you're feeling is what a lot of people feel, I think.
Yeah.
I plan to get into it with the show about my mom, too, because I've gone through all the stuff that you're talking about. And, I don't know if it's more difficult or less difficult, but I navigated all this while maintaining a relationship with my mother, which was up and down. And, you know, it went through various stages. But, you know, in the end, we got to like what I would consider to be a somewhat healthy relationship. And I was there to sort of look after her at the end in a kind of a duty way. But there was always still in my mind this battle of what was me being like exaggerated as a victim, yeah. And what was fair for me to feel about myself.
And I like what you say about duty, because I know when I left actually, I don't know if I've said this in the podcast, but the career guidance, did I talk about that, called me, I was only 18, and she called me and said, oh, you know, you've left your mother and her mother has cancer. Now I'd like to say that that's how I found out my grandmother had cancer. Nobody fucking told me. How would you feel if she killed herself? No, I hung up the phone.
Your guidance counselor said that?
And career guidance.
In school?
Yeah, and no, none of them were like worried about me when I was like, nobody really knew what was going on. And again, I hadn't said anything. That was fine. And I still had a really good relationship with my father. So he was very good when stuff was going on. But my dad called her and said, like, you're so lucky that I'm not going to have your job for this. Like, this is so wrong. You're meant to be looking after my daughter. You don't even know. Have you even asked her? What were you guys doing? Well, you know what I mean? And so he handled it very well. And he said, like, she's doing her exams there. Don't speak to her again. But that sense of duty, I guess, where I didn't tell anyone what was going on because I felt a sense of duty to a parent. And when I left, I got a lot of negative things. Some people were amazing. I had a best friend, and her family were so supportive. They let me stay with her while I was going to school, and they were very private about it. When people asked them, they didn't get involved. So there was great people, but that, you know, I had family members kind of be like, well, she's your mother, you know, like, but I, that doesn't mean she's my responsibility. And I'd put in 18 years, so I was kind of like, no, fuck it, I'm gone. But there is that sense of duty where you're like, oh, what do I have to not have a life, or do I have to have this life that's going to make me, you know, maybe potentially suicidal? Like, I chose to leave because it was the best course of action for me.
Yeah, but there 100%. Was that sense of, well, you're duty. A victim of abuse.
But like you said, with the duty, where you're like, oh, you feel like, yeah, you feel responsible. And some people maintain that relationship because of that.
Yes. Also, I can tell you that I had the very same experience in a different way with my own mother, in the sense that there was a time where I did not maintain the relationship. I made a decision like you, slightly different because not exactly the same in terms of the intensity of what was going on with your mom, but at the same time, you know, I was in another country at 14, so read between the lines, like, there was some stuff going on. So, but at one stage after my father died, I made the decision that I'd had enough of the nonsense. And for, you know, a period of about 18 months, I did not speak to my mother. And I got a ton of that shit that you got from my, you know, people close to my mother. But I got it way later, well after, because in actual fact, it was the best thing I ever did, because myself and my mother's relationship improved intensely after that 18-month period, because in the meantime, she went and did a lot of stuff for herself. She went and got a therapist. She went and joined a self-help organization and decided that she was actually going to try to do something about herself, which, in fairness to her, she'd also lost her husband, so she's now, like, on her own as a human being. She reached a moment where people say, you know, when you do something about yourself is when it's actually more painful to not do something, right? So it was more painful for her to not do something than to try to just maintain the status quo. Anyway, she did all these changes, and when we, you know, sort of started talking again, our relationship had improved, and she had clearly improved as a person. You know, she had like a decent sort of last decade of her life. Anyway, long story short, when she started to get sick, myself and my brothers showed up properly, like 100%, flew back from fucking China. I flew back from Ireland on numerous occasions, like consistently present. And very difficult to be present because I'm fucking living all over the world, but always present, never not present. Somebody challenged me on the period of time where I didn't talk to my mother at this time where she needed somebody, which was after my dad died, but not immediately after my dad died. It was, you know, time enough and connected to my dad dying that related to this moment where we separated. Because at some point you have to say enough's enough, right? Mm-hmm. At some point you have to value yourself to say, no, enough's enough. So anyway, long story short, I got exactly the same shit that you got from people, but that has nothing to do with you, nothing to do with me, everything to do with that person. But obviously at the time, it's very fucking hard to see it that way.
Yeah.
Very difficult to see it that way.
Yeah, I know it is.
And God knows I did not react by saying, this is about you. I fucking had, there was war. There was fucking war.
And like, I don't blame you. And it is hard. And I think you're right. It is about them. And it's either A, they want to be involved, or B, they didn't. They were sick listening to the person at the time. And
yeah, and they don't know. They don't even know.
They don't. They're not there. They're not. They're making a point on a.
Yeah, they just don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know. But weirdly enough, I had with that particular person I'm talking about, our relationship is not bad because, you know, they're fucking, everybody's got their shit, and like, I was full of resentment, but the resentment is pointless, you know? And actually, we have a decent relationship, but I certainly have felt that fucking pushback from when you decide to look after yourself.
Yeah.
And God knows that your fucking duty to your mom. I mean, the reality is that your mother was not able to do the job of a mother. And on some level, you can have compassion for whatever the fuck was going on for her. Mm-hmm. But you can't let the compassion of whatever's going on for her get in the way of you having compassion for yourself. Somehow, your what's happened to you is less than whatever the fuck is driving your mom.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just can't understand it. They can't relate because they have a good relationship. And now, my mother always painted me as a terrible daughter. But when I think, it's so funny, I just realized recently, I was like, I was five when she was telling, I wasn't, and anybody else who met me always said, do you know, it's just, I'm glad that I'm getting to that point where I was like, actually, no, I'm a good person. But anyway, when you do decide to cut off that relationship, people don't understand. And I always think it's funny because it's like, I'm not cutting out my birth mother for no fucking reason. Like, there's obviously reasons, but I don't have to share that with you. And I remember one time my cousin's amazing. Like, it's so funny. When I left home and people were hounding me and I was studying, me and her went to the woods just because there was so much drama going on and I needed to study for a test. And she went and got my books. She's a 16-year-old girl. Went and got my books, brought them down, told me not to worry about anything, that I didn't need to talk about it, but we just needed to study. And she was the only one who acted like a fucking adult in that whole thing. And she got a bit of shit for that as well. And in hindsight, you know, people apologized later on when they kind of found out what was going on. And years later, she came to me and she said, what was really going on? And I told her and she got really upset. And she goes, why didn't you tell? And I go, because nobody fucking asked. And it wasn't up to her to ask. She was a child as well. But I mean, like, everybody kind of just went, ah, it's grand. When, you know, I think... to then come at me afterwards is like, well, you just don't know. You can't come at me now. It's an interesting thing where people just presume they know, or
yes,
because you're not talking about it. Oh, like, if I've cut out a parent, or if anyone has cut out a parent, it's for good fucking reasons.
Yes. Do you ever give yourself credit for being able to navigate all that yourself as a child?
Yeah, I do. I do, in fairness. I do think, I think I was like very, like, yeah, no, because I think I could have easily been like stayed and felt sorry for myself and went down a different road. But I think it took a bit of strength to kind of go, actually, I really...
Yeah, you and your little 16-year-old cousin.
I know, she's so great. Like, she's one of my best friends. And that took, like, it's when I think about it now, because I've been writing about it recently just to get it out. But I was like, yeah, she was only 16 and she came and she was so responsible and... Yeah, like, and the only one who out of my family who acted like an adult and kind of didn't put any judgment on me. Yeah. And she got a lot of stick for that at the time. And I'm sure if they listen to this now, they'd probably give her a little bit. But hopefully not, because I think with years later, like, and even her parents years later were always great. Like, I went on holiday with them and I ended up being able to have a relationship with them. And I have a relationship with my cousins out now. Years later, another cousin of mine came to America and she came to meet me and she never brought it up. And... you know, and I wouldn't have had the best relationship with her mother, but let's say we're able to have a relationship outside of that. So years later, things kind of work out. Which is great.
I mean, Irish people like to think that like it's uniquely Irish dysfunction, but actually dysfunction is quite general. But I mean, certainly in an Irish context, I think a lot of Irish families will identify with aspects of what you're talking about, the level of dysfunction and resentments that come up. But it's good to be able to... Well, to resolve them.
And I think the issue between, like, okay, just because you gave birth to someone, and I know you do give up a lot of life, but doesn't mean that they owe you everything, or that you get to control them, or that they're your possession, or that they're your slave. And I had an ex-boyfriend who I seen a lot. His father is very like that, where he thinks because he's his son, he owes him all his time. Like, you know, and he had to put a lot. He has to. Anytime the father calls, he goes and does it. And he gave the father money, and he gave and you're like, you're my son, you owe this. And it's like, and when I was seeing all that, I was like, really, like, reminding me of what I kind of went through a little bit. But it's not fair. As a parent, you have to just, you know, you've given birth and stuff, and like, yeah, you've given up a lot, but that doesn't mean you're like, fuck you, I give my life for you. And I think you have that joke as well about. That's a great joke about.
I'm not saying my mother didn't love me. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, that one. That's so... Yeah, that related.
My mother didn't
so
love me. She just forgot to let me know.
No, the sacrifice one.
Oh, if you ask an Irish mother, if you make the mistake of asking an Irish mother, Mom, do you love me? She goes, do I love you? Didn't I sacrifice everything for you?
And I think that's...
Which is funny, because I do that in an Irish accent, even though my mother was a New York born. Yeah. But, you know, she had a very Irish way about her.
I think that's true as well. As a parent, you have to remember that they still have their own life, and they don't... Like, of course, they owe you respect, but, like, feck, it's not... And if you regret that, you can't put that onto your, like, God, yeah.
And it's funny because people say, well, you don't understand, you don't have kids. And I get that. However, when I see, say, my brother's family, and I see my friends, and I have friends that I know grew up in a similar sort of a vibe to my house, none of them have recreated the atmosphere that existed in our house, mm-hmm. in our childhood. So I know that people will say, oh, but you'll understand when you have kids. And of course you're going to make mistakes. You're not going to be a fucking perfect parent. But it's very easy to fucking stop the cycle. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and I was smart. When I was a kid, she was saying, oh, you know, you ruined my life. You stopped our career. And like, and look, and that's, again, I'm not going to get into the personal details, but I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who've had parents be like, I give up this for you, I give up that. And I think and that's only a small thing, but I think that can really affect. And that's really
Because that's not shame. Fair because that's like you feel bad for existing.
Even if it was an accident. And a lot of time it's not. And even if it was an accident, well, look, that was your responsibility. You know, and that's it. That's not
the job.
Yeah, that's not the
kid. If you don't want the job, don't fucking have a child.
Give the job away. Were people better to fulfill that position?
Right. Well, that's original
sin. And oh, do you know what? My issue with therapy as well probably comes back to when I was a kid, because when my parents divorced, I had a very bad experience with the therapist.
Oh.
So, and I felt he asked me to choose which parent to live with. Now, of course, that was already pre-designed. I never had the choice. But I went in there and I was very much, you know, my mother told me, oh, if you don't say me, all these bad things will happen. So I felt a 5-year-old felt a lot of guilt afterwards, because obviously I said my mother, but like really I would have loved to live with my dad. But I felt a lot of guilt, and I think that's probably my issue with, so I had like one little, and I don't think you should ask the kid that, because really that's not.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Katie, you really dealt with quite a lot, in my opinion. That's a lot as a child.
Yeah, oh no, there's a lot more that I'm not getting into, but
yeah, of course. That's obvious. Yeah. And I think it would be great if you did talk to somebody who just understands, even though I think you have a pretty good grasp. Yeah, I think you have a good grasp of it yourself, but I also think that it would be worth talking to somebody. So say if you talk to somebody who's heard a version of what you're talking about at least 30 times, maybe 50 times.
Yeah.
I think that they will have learned a couple of tricks to help you.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think the only reason why I'm half as able to address it and okay with it is because I had my dad and my stepmother. And my stepmother is a social care worker. So, you know, the woman's amazing. She never said a bad word about my mother or my parents' relationship, but she was always there to listen and guide me through a lot, and like even just listening or tell me I'm great and stuff like that. But I think a lot of people don't have that.
Yeah,
they don't have. So what I had was
Thank
I
God
had,
you had that. I but had, you deserved it, by the way.
And I know
you shouldn't feel guilty about that too.
But I mean, like, I think I'm lucky, and I think there's people who wouldn't have had that who can't really. It's funny because I wrote about it. I haven't done anything with it, but I didn't do anything with it because I felt guilty, because I was like, I'll be telling on her now. Mm. But then I was like, oh well, actually it's kind of her own fault.
But I think the writing is good too. Like if I said to you, what are the things that you're doing, and you say, I'm getting my nails done and I'm doing this, but I would also think that actually writing is a good one.
Yeah, my dad said, I remember my dad asked me to write when I was 18 and I was going through all of it, and he was like, look, write all of this. And he said, I didn't now because I couldn't deal with it. But he said, a bad pen is better than a good memory. And he was like, it might be something later on you kind of want to. But I was like, I don't even want to. I just want to forget all this. So I never wrote about it at the time. But
a bad pen is better than a good memory?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So he means like even if the pen loses ink, it's better to have it in writing than trying to go back in your brain and figure it out, because what your brain is emotions. See, my dad.
Because he's a cop.
Because he's a policeman. He told me this thing that's so hard. And I ended up doing an art project about it actually for my final year of college. Got me an A, baby. But which I don't use now. But he told me about when you witnesses is so hard. You can never base what happened on a witness, because people bring in their emotions. They see. So let's say if someone said you did something and I was there, but I have such a good impression of you that I would see it totally different. And let's say if the other person didn't like you, they would see it different. And
yes.
You could say something and I'd be like, no, he just meant that as a laugh, and they don't like you. So they're like, no, he meant it sinister.
Yeah.
And it's really hard, and it's not their fault. It's just there's so much emotions there.
Yes.
And
so it would be great. It's great to have in writing the way that you're feeling at the time.
Yes.
Which I agree. I mean, I find stuff more. I find stuff that I've written, like not just work stuff, like just, you know, particularly those early years when I was like doing a lot of self-exploration, and you find stuff and you're like, fuck yeah, well, I forgot how I was feeling back then.
And it can happen so quickly. Like even the last guy I was dating, like he would do something and I would kind of say it to you and I would say it to my friends and I'd be like, this is awful. And then I would go talk to him and I'd be like, ah, it's grand, I'll just forget about it. But then, so when I finally broke up and
but now we have it all on the podcast. So we'll remind you in a year when you're with some other abusive guy. We'll be like, hey, Katie, we thought you learned them. We have it on episode 6 here.
Yeah, right. I just play it back and I'm like, oh, okay, great. But no, what I did this time was I wrote it down, everything. And so anytime I felt like, oh, maybe I was wrong, maybe I should text, I looked into it and I was like, oh, I wasn't wrong. It's so quick how you can forget and just kind of justify it and make excuses. I do that all the time.
In other words, the mind is a very imperfect organ.
Yeah, I think writing things down. What I did, my dad said to me, he was like, from now on, because he thinks I don't give nice guys a chance. From now on, I want you to write a list. And if they don't even match up to one part in that list, X, gone. So I wrote my list.
Okay.
But I had wrote a list before, but it was really basic stuff. So it needs to be more. And I think that's, anyway, write your list, people.
I have a list.
Do you?
Yeah. It's got two words on it.
Be hot.
Maura Higgins.
Maura Higgins!
I'm only joking.
Sorry, Curtis.
I'm only joking, Curtis.
Is Curtis hot? I want to Google him.
He's hot, but he put on a few pounds in the villa. But we got to go.
We do. Jesus. Oh, my God. I have to go meet my friend's sister.
Yeah, I have to go. And pee one more time, and then...
Yes, you can use the loo in my new apartment. Yes. I love it. Isn't it nice?
It's lovely. Yeah. And it's nice little neighborhood.
And my roommate, Irish lads, love my roommate. She's from Peru, and I brought her up to Woodlawn one time, and all my old school, a bunch of guys I went to school with, but I'm not friendly with, were all there. Like, I'd be friendly, but I'm not friends. And oh my God, they were like, she's just so beautiful. They were all trying to get her attention. Yeah. They liked the accent. And she's
right,
beautiful
go.
Lips.
Okay. Let's go before I wet myself.
Bye.
Bye. So thanks everyone for listening. Thank you, Katie, for really being quite honest, actually. And I thought it was pretty cool ep. Thought it was very interesting. You never know the way a conversation is going to go. Truth be told, we actually had discussed quite a lot more themes from the TED Talk, but I didn't include them because both of us were actually kind of waffling quite a bit. And I just thought to myself, Esther Perel describes them way better than we do. So let's not bore our listeners with our own sort of inexperienced take on the stuff that she was articulating really well. So I do recommend that you listen to that TED Talk. It's Esther Perel TED Talk about the that Joanne had mentioned last week. Some of you perhaps had already listened to it, but I listened to it because of that. Anyway, at Katie Boyle Comic, add Katie. Feedback to Katie on that. Feedback to me on @DesBishop. On Instagram, or you can email contacttheshift@gmail.com. Not a lot of people using that, but we do like feedback. We did have a little bit of a bump in listeners for whatever reason, and so we appreciate all our new listeners. Thank you for being with us. If you haven't, please do give us the old 5-star review on iTunes and leave a comment if possible, even just a like amazing, great. Both of them are so sexy. If you could do that, that'd be great. Just do leave a comment. Other than that, as always, check out Katie's Instagram for where she's doing shows. I'll be doing one more of my warm-up shows about the show about my mom, which I now call Mia Mama. And it's on August 20th at the Fat Black Pussycat at the Comedy Cellar. We've done two now. They've both gone really well. Thanks to anybody who came to that. We had a few shift listeners in at the show. Katie has been opening up for me for those, by the way. And I'm in the Mohegan Sun in September, if anybody's around for that. I'm back in Vegas, actually, in September, too, at the Comedy Cellar. And then I'm back doing the second half of the Fitting In. It was fucking 2005. Take the Points tour back in Ireland starting in October through to December. And then the new show in the new year. Anyway, guys, whatever. Yep, 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 yep. Spread the word about the podcast, guys.
Great things going on. Love you all. Have a good day.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.